If you would turn to Romans 3, this got dangerously close today, but we're okay. In fact, it's a perfect dovetail. I wanted to cover Romans 3, 21 to 31, so it'll fall right as the second part of Romans 3. What I want to address today is a whole subject of right versus wrong. And the reason for that is that in the Greek, and in fact in the Hebrew, there's very close association with the word right, righteousness, judgment, and to justify. And Romans 3 is all about justification. And so I thought we would look at this topic. The way I'd like to do it is to first examine the word, or the different words, mainly in the Greek, that refer to this, and then we'll go from there. You know, much of life is about what's right and what's wrong. And society has a notion of what's right and what's wrong, different societies in the world. But we've got the perfect answer to what's right and wrong in the Bible. And so let's just examine that and then see how that leads through the thoughts of judgment, righteousness, and ultimately justification, or declaring someone righteous. The root word in the Greek for all of these different words is dike. I guess you would say in English, D-I-K-A, dike, or E. And what it means in the root of the word is custom, right as dependent on custom or law. It was used by Plato, Sophocles, Homer, and thus trial or penalty. You know that the world, in their philosophy, believes that right and wrong come from the culture we're in, and that different parts of the world, having different cultures, would evolve different rights and wrongs. Now, a lot of them have similarities. But we who are Christians know that there's something a lot deeper to right and wrong than just one's culture and one's conscience and what you build up as you grow up in a culture. But the root word does mean that. It means custom or right as dependent on custom or law. Then you have dikaios, taken from that, which means observant of custom, civilized. Now you see this starting to develop. Observant of right, righteous, right, lawful, or just, real, genuine, or true. So you have that from dikaios. So that's an adjective that describes people as righteous. Then dikaiosune is the word for righteousness or justice. Righteousness or justice. Dikaioma, it means judgment, punishment, or penalty. And you can see how that's related, because if you've got right and wrong, you've got to judge the wrong. Well, first of all, you've got to judge to determine what, if a person is right or wrong, and then you punish those who are wrong. So that's another word that comes from this. Now you move into the verb, dikaiao. And this is where it gets very interesting, because one set of the meanings means to set right or to do a man right. Therefore, to judge, dikaiao can mean to judge. So you are setting the case before you of a right and wrong thing, and you're judging which is right and which is wrong. You're coming to that conclusion. Then, in other words, in a trial, what happens is, whether it's just a judge or whether it's a jury and a judge, all the facts are presented and all of these things go on, and then the judge or the jury has to pronounce the person, or they have to administer justice. Justice is another word related to this. So they deem or they declare the person right or wrong. They judge, and they dikaiao that person, and they say whether, from the facts, that person is deemed to be right in the case or wrong. And that's all fine and good. And what happens as a result is dikaiosis, which is punishment, justification, that is declaring someone just. But what is the ultimate use of this word in the New Testament? We know that it is not declaring us just from the right we've done within ourselves. But it is, now we got to coin another word, it is deeming us, or you could still say declaring, but not because of inherent rightness or justification. But God justifies us because of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. He imputes that righteousness to us. It's nothing. The judge is not saying, I've looked at you and I see that you are just. But he's saying, I've looked at you, and because of Jesus Christ dying for you, I declare you just. I declare you righteous. And this is the meaning that the world can't understand, that Christians are declared righteous, not because they are inherently, but because of the sacrifice, the propitiation of Jesus Christ. So when we finally get to Romans 3, 21 to 31, we'll see that so vividly, but I kind of want to build up to it first. So this whole word has the meaning of to judge. Instead of to judge, what we are interested in is to deem or declare righteous. You know, Romans is a fantastic theology, the closest thing to systematic theology we have in the Bible. And what Paul does is he builds up through the eight chapters of Romans that are doing the theology. Then you got 9, 10, and 11 about the Jews, and then you have the rest of the book, which is practical things. If you take Romans 1 through 8, what you do is you start out with Romans 1 and 2 talking about guilt, condemnation, and hypocrisy, how we're all guilty. Then Romans 3, as the pastor did this morning, all have sinned. Everyone has sinned. And the back part of Romans 3 is justification, because the need is that we've all sinned, so we need to be justified. Then Romans 4 is the example of Abraham, and that the answer is not law and works to get us out of this predicament, but it's justification by faith. Romans 5 is Adam versus Christ, as what each of those did for the race. Romans 6 is a wonderful chapter that asks the question, okay, since this is all true, shall we just go on sinning? Why not? You know, that we've been justified from nothing we did ourselves. Shall we go on sinning? And Paul says, of course not. If indeed you've been justified, then you are servants of righteousness instead of servants of sin now. Not that it's perfect, but that's what we are. Romans 7 is the indwelling sin still in us. And Romans 8 is victory in the Spirit. Wonderful string of chapters that lay this whole thing out so vividly for us. So, in Romans 3, verses 9 to 18 state that all Jews and Gentiles have sinned, everyone. And verses 19 and 20 say that the law, the purpose of the law in all of this, and that is to reveal sin. That's the only purpose of the law, is to reveal sin. And then verses 21 to 31, justification. Before we go to those verses, like to point out a few uses of the word dikaiosis, or the different forms of it in the Old Testament. The way that you do the Greek is through the Septuagint in the Old Testament. There is a Hebrew word, tzaddik, for righteousness, which parallels this word dikaios in the Greek. Let's look at a few verses in the Old Testament and get our thinking cap on for righteousness in the Old Testament. Turn, if you would, to Genesis 6:9. We all know that there's only been one way of salvation or justification in all of history, man's history. It wasn't different in the Old Testament. They didn't work for their righteousness. And then in the New Testament, we give ours handed to us. It's all the same throughout the Bible. And sometimes it's hard to see through that in the Old Testament. For instance, Genesis 6, 9. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. You've heard that verse a lot. You know, and you've had explained to you the fact that perfect in this Hebrew word doesn't mean perfect. It just means mature, well advanced, and very, very good. But it doesn't mean absolute perfection. So how do you take that verse? Has that ever given you a problem? It has me. Well, I think the way that you take that verse is you look at verse 8 first. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Now, how could Noah find grace in the eyes of the Lord if he was a perfect man? He didn't need grace. Well, obviously, he was not a perfect man. He was a sinner like the rest of us. And first things first, he found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And when you find grace in the eyes of the Lord, you're justified by faith. The Lord starts imparting some righteousness to you. And then we can have verse 9, Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations and walked with God. Why did he walk with God? Because he decided, I'm going to walk with God and be a good guy? No, God got into his life first, saved him, gave him grace, and then Noah was a righteous man. It's that order. And then let's look at Abraham. Abraham's the next one we think about. Genesis 15, 6, and you know the answer to this one because it's quoted all through the New Testament. You know some of Abraham's sins. Abraham did his wife real dirty a couple of times by saying, hey, say you're my sister, because I'm afraid of this guy. And, you know, not a whole lot of ethics or courage there. So Genesis 15, 6 says, and he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. So here is the first look we have at the fact that even in the Old Testament, God justified people freely by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, and the way that it came to them was through faith. We're going to talk in a minute about the fact that faith is not another work that all of a sudden earns you righteousness, which Arminians are taking it to be. They just make faith into another work. Faith is a gift of God itself. So faith is just the channel through which we realize our justification. So Abraham believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. So that's how Abraham got his righteousness. Same way Noah got his righteousness. They were not good people inherently who God recognized as the judge. And he, in the trial, he's saying, okay, he did right, and I'm judging him as righteous. No, he deemed him righteous by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Then let's look at Moses, Exodus 33:12. And Moses said unto the Lord, see, thou sayest unto me, bring up this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. Moses was not an inherently good person. He was saved by the Lord, and the whole rest of the chapter mentions this grace repeatedly. And in Moses' life, and you can read the rest of that. So Moses was the same as these other patriarchs in that he was justified by faith also. Look at Exodus 23:7. I'll show you one that appears to be a contradiction. Exodus 23:7, this is in the passage about the law, the giving of the law. Exodus 23:7 says, keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and the righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. He says, I will not justify the wicked. Well, we're all wicked, Romans 1 through 3, and he justified us. So how does that fit? Well, this is in the context, obviously, of apart from atonement and apart from propitiation, apart from the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, obviously God is just. And he will in no way, this is stated in Proverbs, all over the Old Testament, there's no way he will justify the evil. He's not a wishy-washy God. He knows right, he knows wrong, and he will not cross that line. But through Jesus Christ, we have propitiation that makes it different. That's the only way. Similar passages in Deuteronomy 25:1. Let's read that. So really, these verses are the verses that the lost are dependent on. And that's pretty scary. Deuteronomy 25:1 says, if there be a controversy between men and they come into judgment, that the judges may judge them, then they shall justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. There you go. There's judgment. There's the trial system. There is that decay in culture. You have a case, you have a question about right and wrong, and the judges are supposed to judge them, and they're supposed to justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. And that's exactly what God will do at judgment to the lost who do not have Christ. There will be no doubt about the justice of that. 1 Kings 8:32. Says, then hear thou in heaven, and do, and judge, this is Solomon's prayer, and judge thy servants, condemning the wicked, to bring his way upon his head, and justifying the righteous, to give him according to his righteousness. And that's what will be done at the great white throne judgment to the lost of the world. And of course, no one will make it into that first category of justifying the righteous because nobody will be righteous. So what do most of our co-workers, neighbors, and the people we rub elbows with in society believe about this whole thing when you really press them? Well, I've done so many good works and I've done so many bad works and I'm just trying for the first category. Had algebra to be plus one, x plus one over the second category, and then I'll make it. That's not the way, because God, as a righteous judge, will judge the entire package as either righteous or wicked. Then let's turn to, well, let me just say this one to you. Ecclesiastes 7:20. For there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. So that's similar to the passages quoted in Romans 3 there about all of us having sinned. So that's the natural state of all of us. There's not a just man upon earth. Nobody is going to get into that group at the judgment apart from Christ. Ecclesiastes 9:1. Now, the rest of Ecclesiastes talks a lot about righteous people and versus the others. And you could see that as a contradiction because there aren't any righteous people. Well, what it's talking about is just relatively that when in our day-to-day workings, you'll see righteous deeds and you'll see unrighteous deeds. And that's what a lot of Ecclesiastes is. Habakkuk 2:4 is the famous verse, but the just shall live by his faith. And we'll get to that in Romans 3. Now, Job. Don't you love Job? I have been reading Job, and it's new every time I read it. Let's read a few verses in Job. Now, you can't take your theology from Job. You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful who you're reading. And Job doesn't get it right a lot of the time. His three friends, or four, definitely don't get it right, although they get some things right. The only person who gets it right is God in the end, and that's the best part of Job. So you got to watch Job, but there's some interesting ones here on the lines of righteousness. Job 9, 1 through 3. You know, a lot of what Job is doing is he's trying to justify himself. That's a lot of what people try to do, is they justify their actions in themselves. And so in Job 9, 1 through 3, Job answered and said, "I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand." So Job was saying, after all of these discussions and trying to justify myself, I realized the fact that nobody can be just in God's eyes. And then verse 20 of that chapter, Job 9:20, "If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse." Then look at Job 15. 15:14. "What is man that he should be clean, and he which is born of a woman that he should be righteous?" So what were Job's friends telling him? Well, they had very simple theology. It's this, and that's what a lot of people have. If you do bad, God will judge you and bad things will happen to you. If you do good, God will judge you and good things will happen to you. And obviously, Job didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. His friends didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, where Satan had asked for a chance to test Job in God's counsel, that God actually said he's a righteous man, so he must have been justified at this point somehow. It's not somehow, it's through Christ. And yet, these things that happened to Job weren't because he had done anything wrong. They were tests. And so that's what's going on here. So in 15:14, "What is a man that he should be clean, and he which is born of woman that he should be righteous?" He's starting to get it. Job's starting to get the fact that he's not inherently righteous. 22:3, "Is it any pleasure to the Almighty that thou art righteous?" This is Eliphaz. He actually said a good thing here. "Or is it gain to him that thou makest thy ways perfect?" Is it to God's benefit that we do right instead of wrong? Does that make God all happy and make his day for him? Of course not. God is above all that. And so we don't affect God in what we do. And so it's not a pleasure to the Almighty if I do what's right. In 25:4, "How then can man be justified with God, or how can he be clean that is born of woman?" He said, Bildad saying it. And then 40, chapter 40, verse 8. I think we're finally into God's speech here. 40, verse 8 says, "Wilt thou also disannul my judgment? Wilt thou condemn me that thou mightest be righteous?" That's what a lot of the world is doing today too, isn't it? They condemn God to make themselves appear righteous. Elihu in Job 32:2 said an interesting thing. Let's go back to that one. Job 32:2. "Then was kindled the wrath of Elihu, the son of Barakel the Buzite of the kindred of Ram. Against Job was his wrath kindled because he justified himself rather than God." So it made Elihu mad what Job was doing. And then 33:32, "If thou hast anything to say, answer me. Speak, for I desire to justify thee." That's God speaking to Job. That's an interesting one. So Job goes into these fits of trying to justify himself, saying, At first he got very depressed, said, just kill me, Lord. I just can't take all this. But then he goes into these soliloquies of defense of to God and wanting God to make himself known to Job. And why are you doing this to me? Pity parties and all of that. But he comes to the conclusion in the end of what's really going on. Isaiah 53:11 is the answer that we want to get to in Romans. Isaiah 53:11 says, and this is the great messianic passage, speaking of the Messiah, he shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. So there you go. The only way, and Job said himself, didn't he? He was looking for a mediator. The only way that we can be justified is for someone to bear our iniquities, these wrong things we've done and continuously do, in order to be declared righteous. This is the great revelation of the Reformation, is to be declared righteous, not truly made righteous. Now, let's go to, in Genesis 15:6, Abraham's faith was counted to him for righteousness. But you have to be careful about that passage because people go to seed on faith. And faith is not just another work. And we'll see that in Romans 3. So now let's go to Romans 3. We'll end up just reading verses 21 to 31 with a few comments. The great definitive passage in the whole New Testament on justification, 21 through 31. But now, and these are all that root word of one form or another, decay, but now the righteousness of God without the law is manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God which is by faith of Jesus Christ, or in Jesus Christ, unto all and upon all them that believe. For there is no difference, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. I'll come back to this later. The verb tenses are very important. Being justified freely by his grace through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God hath set forth to be a propitiation, that's the word hilasterion, through faith in his blood to declare his righteousness for the remission of sins that are past through the forbearance of God, to declare, I say at this time, his righteousness, that he might be just and the justifier of him which believeth in Jesus. So whenever you see the word righteous or righteousness, and then right along with it, just and justifier, sounds like different words, R and J. They're the same root word in the Greek. Where is boasting then? It is excluded. By what law? Of works? Nay, but by a law of faith. Therefore we conclude that a man is justified by faith without the deeds of the law. Is he the God of the Jews only? Is he not also of the Gentiles? Yes, of the Gentiles also, seeing it is one God which shall justify the circumcision by faith and the uncircumcision through faith. Do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid, yea, we establish the law. So some key things in this passage is that, first of all, in verse 21, righteousness is revealed to us apart from the law. And so what we're going to be seeing is that, yes, the law sets down the commandments of what's right and wrong, but it doesn't get you out of the problem. It does nothing more than show us that we're sinners. It's very effective that way because we've got this law and we see we don't meet it and we're convicted by sin. But it doesn't get us to righteousness. Verse 22, which mentions faith, but faith is not the cause of righteousness. What is the cause of righteousness in this passage? The the righteousness of God, which is by faith in Jesus Christ, which means it comes to us through that means, or it's revealed to us through that means, unto all upon that believe, for there's no difference, for all, and you read, keep reading on down, being justified freely by his grace, we didn't earn it even by faith, faith doesn't earn it, through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. There's the first key word, redemption. So we had to be redeemed. That's the cause of justification. And the other cause of justification is in the next verse, whom God set forth to be a propitiation, which is a payment. It's a payment, helasterion. Helasterion is only used a couple of times in the New Testament. And one of them, it's used quite a bit in the Old Testament, 10 or 15 times, of the mercy seat, helasmos. It's the mercy seat on top of the ark. And what happened on that mercy seat? Once a year on the Day of Atonement, they would sprinkle the blood of the sin sacrifice on that altar for the sins of the nation. And so that is the related to blood. It's the covering of the death by blood of Jesus Christ to cover our sins. That's the mercy seat. And so, whom God set forth, Jesus is whom God set forth to be a propitiation, to declare his righteousness for the remission of sins through the forbearance. So, the two key words for the reason for justification in Romans 3 are this word propitiation and the word redemption. But faith is the means by which we even understand our justification. And that's given to us from God. Now, back to verse 23 and 24. I want you to get the tenses of these verbs. For all have sinned. That's hamartone. That's an aorist tense in the Greek, which just is looking at it as a past tense, point action, just kind of looking at it as an overall activity in the past. For all of us have sinned in the past. And come short, it's not real clear in the King James, but that is a present tense, and are coming short right now, every day, of the glory of God. Now we have being justified, that is a present passive participle. It talks about completed action with ongoing results. Dikaiomenoi, having been justified freely by his grace. So you have the picture of we sinned in the past, we are continuing to come short, but we have been justified, clear back to there and ongoing, through this propitiation. It covers the whole scene through the redemption. And then the word freely, that's grace, nothing we earn. We already talked about helasterion, meaning propitiation. It's the mercy seat over the ark. Through faith in his blood. Blood is another key word for what happened here in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Past sins and the forbearance of God. And then verse 27, there's not to be any boasting because it's all by grace that we have received this justification. So, in short, there are some wonderful words in the New Testament and Old Testament for justification, right, righteous, judge, to declare righteous, that all come together in the death of Jesus Christ for us and the propitiation that he offered. Nobody in any part of history has ever earned the justification of God. Nobody in history has ever been righteous on their own. None of the patriarchs, nobody except the God-man, Jesus Christ, who lived on.